Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to another episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewire.news podcast hosted by the legal journalism team that wants to push the Georgia legislature out the window. I'm Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Piclo. Rewire.news is dedicated to bringing you the best reproductive rights and social justice news, commentary, and analysis on the web, and the Team Legal podcast is part of that mission. So a big thanks to our subscribers and a welcome to our new listeners.
We here at Team Legal have talked a lot about these so-called heartbeat bans.
Oh, so much.
So much. These are bills that ban abortion after 6 weeks, which is before many folks even know that they're pregnant. We've written about it, we've podcasted about it, and we've said time and time again that they are unconstitutional pre-viability abortion bans that are wildly unconstitutional. Did I mention that they're unconstitutional, Jess?
So unconstitutional.
Super unconstitutional. But for some reason, state legislatures aren't listening to us. They are continuing to ramp up their efforts to enact these near-total abortion bans, which is what these fetal heartbeat bans actually are. And Georgia is the latest to jump on the near-total abortion ban train, with one of the most strict bans passed by any state so far.
And in some cases, it's been up to state courts to come in and stymie these legislative efforts and block these laws. And that's what we're going to talk about today. In this episode, we're going to walk you through this whole Georgian nonsense and then explain how states like Kansas can offer a roadmap for protecting abortion rights.
Wait, did you say Kansas? As in, like, ground zero for Operation Rescue Kansas? Are we talking about Summer of Mercy Kansas? Are we talking about where Dr. George Tiller was murdered, Kansas?
I did, in a landmark decision that is so good it's worth drawing a bubble bath and reading it in the tub with a nice rosé. The Kansas Supreme Court found a fundamental right to abortion in its state constitution, and then spent 200 pages explaining why abortion is a fundamental right, including this long discussion about how abortion isn't just a constitutional right. Imani, it's a natural right.
Wait, are you still talking about Kansas?
I am, right? It's just, it's so good. So in this episode, we're going to talk about Georgia, we're going to talk about Kansas, and how recent events in both these states suggest that the future of abortion rights could actually be determined by your state constitution.
Fucking Kansas, man.
All right, Imani, let's start with Georgia. What happened in Georgia? This Living Infants Fairness and Equality Act? What? Ugh. What? Really?
Yeah, the illegitimate governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp, signed into law. He's fucking illegitimate. Let's just real talk, guys. Stacey Abrams belongs in that office. At any rate, Brian Kemp signed into law a bill called the Living Infants Fairness and Equality, or LIFE Act.
The LIFE Act. I mean, you know, the Georgia legislature can't get its act together to have some sort of, like, anti-discrimination statute at the state level, but we've got the LIFE Act now. Really. Good job, folks.
Yeah, you gotta love those forced names that legislators concoct just so the bill will have a super sweet acronym like LIFE.
Good grief.
Oy vey. Anyway, so let's just recap what's going on with this bill. So the bill bans abortion as soon as a fetal heartbeat is detected, which again can be as early as 6 weeks before you even know you're pregnant. That's just like missing your period for 2 weeks.
I was just gonna jump in and say fetal heartbeat is really, we're talking like fetal cardiac pole activity here. Like, heartbeat right. is a total misnomer, but we've got to work with, like, the crap they gave us for here. So, you know.
C'est la vie. The bill also recognizes fetuses as natural persons who qualify for state income tax deductions.
Oh my God.
And recognizes them as natural persons for state population-based determinations, meaning it recognizes unborn, quote unquote, unborn children for purposes of the fucking census.
Good grief. Okay. But we're not done. What else does it do?
The bill amends state law to define, quote, natural person to mean, quote, any human being, including an unborn child. And really, I want to talk more about this whole state tax code thing. Like, you can now claim your unborn, quote unquote, unborn child, an embryo in your womb as a dependent for purposes of filing your goddamn taxes. That's wild. And here's the kicker. It's not in the current version of the bill, but in an earlier version of this bill, they straight up said that fetuses are viable at 6 weeks. Now, even though an embryo, which is what this thing, this little thing that's in your womb is called when it's 6 weeks, it's called an embryo cannot survive outside the womb at 6 weeks, so it is therefore ipso facto absolutely straight up not viable.
Ipso facto straight up bullshit is what this is.
It really is.
You can't just swap out legal standards because you've got a hair up your ass to like go after abortion rights.
Oh, God.
And I mean, you know, like, they don't call us the Cassandra of the courts for nothing, right? Imani, we have been saying that the right has been going after that this, that they've been coming at viability in various ways. And in particular, they were going to do it in the most slipperiest sort of like, you know, tugging at the emotions way possible. And here we are.
Here we are. But wait, there's more.
No, yeah. I thought we were done with this shit.
Yeah, shut it down. See you on the tubes.
No.
No, but this bill has unintended, or, you know, if you're cynical like I am, entirely intended consequences for pregnant people and people who plan to assist pregnant people in obtaining abortions. Mark Joseph Stern over at Slate has a really, really good piece that analyzes the consequences that flow from this bill. And these consequences include one of my favorites, the fact that there is no due process for fetuses, embryos, blastocysts that are in the wombs of incarcerated people, right? So let's imagine that there's a pregnant person who's in jail. They're pregnant. The thing, embryo, blastocyst, egg, or whatever inside of them is now a person for purposes of Georgia law, which means that they have been unlawfully seized and imprisoned without due process. It's a Fourth Amendment violation.
I cannot wait for the number of attorneys who are going to line up to start filing habeas petitions to remove that embryo from that detention.
Free the embryo. These embryos are being unlawfully detained.
If we are ever going to get conservatives on a prison abolition mission, this is it.
This is absolutely it.
This is it.
That's one of my favorite bits, but there are other parts that are more likely consequences that are going to flow from this bill. For example, once HB 481 takes effect, if it ever does, a pregnant person who terminates their own pregnancy with a drug that's available on the internet, for example, will have, as a matter of law, killed a human, right, under this new definition of human, thereby committing murder. Now, under Georgia law, the punishment for that crime is life imprisonment or death.
Jesus.
So we're now saying that pregnant people may be punishable by death if they end their own pregnancies. And it's even worse. Let's say a pregnant person miscarries and that miscarriage is somehow due to their own behavior, like they have a drug dependency or an alcohol dependency. That pregnant person would be liable for second-degree murder. And that charge is punishable by 10 to 30 years imprisonment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something else that's really interesting that Stern argues. He says that even if pregnant people want to leave the state to obtain an abortion, they'd be just as liable for punishment in the state of Georgia. So if a pregnant person leaves Georgia and travels to another state that, like Alabama, which is well known for having multiple abortion clinics all over the state, just waiting with open arms to welcome pregnant people.
And no, like, intent to try and, you know, prosecute pregnant people at all.
None at all. Alabama never does that.
No.
Nope. So let's say a person in Georgia goes to Alabama for an abortion. They could be charged with conspiracy to commit murder, which can lead to 10 years imprisonment. And if you're a person who's trying to help a friend obtain an abortion, let's say you drive someone over state lines to get an abortion, you might also be charged with conspiracy. So that's real fun.
Oh my God, these things are terrible. They're terrible, and we're not done. There's even more. To like hone in on the fight and just how intent Georgia is on having it, the bill does something that I think is really interesting slash horrible that I think our fellow law nerds are going to appreciate and latch onto, and is also something that I see opening up some new paths in the fight over abortion rights in the courts. So the law has this preamble, its introductory language that says, you know, sort of what its mission is and the power that the legislature has to pass it. And the law starts by invoking the Georgia state constitution and state constitutional guarantees that, quote unquote, all men are created equal and guaranteed life, liberty, and due process, right? The bill then immediately pivots to a section that says modern medicine has advanced from the time of Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey to the point where the Georgia legislature is now within its power under its own state constitution to provide full legal recognition to, quote, unborn children, which, as you said, it defines as any state of human development.
So this is basically a personhood situation, right? We've got a personhood situation brewing in Georgia.
And we got a personhood situation. Whoop,
whoop. We've got a personhood situation brewing in Georgia. Over and out. But seriously, can states use their own constitution to declare that under state law, a fetus is a person independent of what federal law says? And federal law says, right now anyway, mm-hmm. that a fetus is not a person, right? Because right. Georgia is framing this law as the state providing benefits that are above the minimum required under federal law.
Right. It's this huge federalism fight that's brewing. And, you know, in the abortion wars context, this is sort of, we've danced around this. But here we have Georgia actually saying, we have the power as a state within our own constitution to declare a fetus, an embryo, life at conception, and then legislate and also prosecute accordingly. And so this is super, this is just as messed up.
Can I just say again, I know I said this at the upfront, but how infuriated I am that Brian Kemp cheated his way into office, because if Stacey Abrams were governor right now, she would have never signed this shit. She never would have signed this shit.
I mean, the legislature was going to do what the legislature was going to do, but Abrams wasn't going to sign that.
She wouldn't have signed it. But, you know, we are where we are. So my question for you is, what happens when this law makes it to court?
We have, as you have pointed out time and time again, said that these types of restrictions are patently unconstitutional. They're ridiculously unconstitutional. They are, I am out of adverbs, unconstitutional.
Wildly, crazily.
As, like, all of it. All of it.
Truly, madly, and deeply.
Truly, madly, deeply unconstitutional. So there is every reason to think that this one gets blocked as unconstitutional as well, right? Courts, you know, you just can't go in and say, hey, we're going to swap out legal viability and 40 years of precedent and, you know, get you to bite on something like fetal heartbeats, which aren't even a thing. Like, you know, the judicial institution has to work some. And this is, you know, the 11th Circuit, which is no fan of abortion rights, but even they haven't taken the bait yet. And I mean, you know, most recently they had the Alabama D&E ban, which they basically like shook their fist at the sky through the entire opinion about how they had to strike the D&E ban as unconstitutional, but they still did it, right? So the federal courts still have done it. We, though, have a whole bunch of terrible Trump judges who have sworn to overturn Roe versus Wade in the federal court. So, I mean, you know, I want to have faith in that institution. But, I mean, what is a given isn't really a given anymore, I think, sadly.
Yeah, sadly, because the federal judiciary is totally screwed. And we've been talking about that a lot as well. But I do want to remind everyone, I've seen a lot of sort of misinformation floating about in the ether on Twitter that, you know, abortion is banned in Georgia. The law is not in effect right now. The law is not slated to go into effect until January 1st, 2020. Mm-hmm. There are no six-week bans in effect anywhere in the country, even though states are trying like hell to get them passed and to get them to be upheld. So right now, no six-week bans are applicable or operational in any state, anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And we've got this fight in the federal courts brewing over the extent of federal power, which is why this conversation on the scope of state power and how it cuts in abortion rights is one I think we need to be paying close attention to. And also what makes what happened in Kansas, I think, so thrilling and what we're going to talk about next.
Jess. What a world we are living in when we're talking about Kansas being a beacon for abortion rights. But, you know, here we are. Kansas is a freaking beacon for abortion rights. It's amazing.
Here we are. Here we are, Kansas. Oh, my goodness. Let's talk about this decision. It took the court 2 years, right? The Kansas Supreme Court sat on this case for 2 years and finally ruled that abortion is a fundamental right in Kansas. subject to strict constitutional scrutiny. I know that makes your heart pitter-patter, Imani.
Woo! I love me some strict scrutiny.
And it declared the undue burden standard from Planned Parenthood versus Casey unworkable and fundamentally disrespectful to the fundamental right of reproductive autonomy. Let's just all sit and bask in the glow of that language from the courts.
I mean, slap my ass and call me Susie. You know what I mean?
There you go.
The idea that they're like, you know what, court? Casey was sweet and all, but it's kind of unworkable. It's disrespectful to pregnant people. And right? We got a better plan. We're going to sit up in here. We're going to talk about John Locke. And we're going to talk about natural rights. And it's amazing. So, Jess, please, like, fill my heart more with this Kansas love.
Okay, so the decision came in a challenge to Kansas's D&E ban. That's their ban on later abortion. Kansas was way ahead of the pack in this and the first to pass one of these bills in the country way back in 2015. So anyway, the Kansas Supreme Court decision means the D&E ban will stay blocked while the trial challenging it finally gets underway. In the meantime, though, the state of Kansas is going to have to prove that that ban and any of their other abortion restrictions challenged meets a higher constitutional standard than the undue burden test in Casey. And that is, to use a legal term of art, a big fucking deal.
Woo! I mean, that sounds fucking phenomenal. I mean, strict scrutiny? I love me some strict scrutiny. I really do. And let me just tell you what strict scrutiny is, since it's a thing that I love so much deeply in my heart. Strict scrutiny means that a law will not be constitutional or will not stand unless the law promotes a compelling government interest and it is narrowly tailored to achieve that interest. Now, strict scrutiny is sort of a higher level of scrutiny than intermediate scrutiny, mm-hmm. which is a higher level of scrutiny than rational basis. And rational basis is basically just like, fuck it, whatever. Intermediate is like, well, you know, it's got to have a substantial interest and be tailored to that substantial interest. But strict scrutiny means you better have a good goddamn reason to be passing this law, and it better be narrowly tailored to achieve that interest, to achieve the reason that you're saying you're passing this law.
Yeah, the government rarely wins in a strict scrutiny test, so that is really super exciting. And yes, how the Kansas Supreme Court got to its decision that abortion is a fundamental right is also really amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. So let's talk a little bit about the Kansas Constitution. Section 1 of the Kansas Constitution says, all men are possessed of equal and inalienable natural rights, among which are those of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, I'm sure the first thing that you're thinking, and one of the things that the state seemingly argued, is that, well, this applies to men. It says all men are possessed of equal and inalienable natural rights. It doesn't say anything about women. Well, the court actually addressed that and actually analyzed abortion through a gender bias lens and talked about how back in the day, women weren't considered full people and they didn't have all these rights and, you know, marital rape existed and women couldn't have their own bank accounts and women weren't even allowed to participate in the Constitutional Convention at Wyandotte during which this actual Constitution was formulated and developed. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the court said that Section 1 guarantees women as well as men the right of personal autonomy. And it's really amazing. I mean, the court said specifically, quote, true equality of opportunity in the full range of human endeavor is a Kansas constitutional value, and it cannot be met if the ability to seize and maximize opportunity is tethered to prejudices from two centuries ago. What?
Like rock chalk Jayhawk. I don't know. That's crazy. This decision was so amazing. And one of the things that jumps out to me is that the court is invoking what is essentially parallel language that we just talked about Georgia having to ground its power to legislate on behalf of zygotes. You know, it's wild to me. We are in like the upside down and it's Kansas.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that Kansas grounded abortion rights in natural law is a huge deal. I mean, reading like page after page after page of philosophy and John Locke mm-hmm. and how it is natural rights were formulated and what it means from a moral perspective and how it is that state governments can't infringe on natural rights because they are basically, I mean, essentially God-given rights. The Kansas court essentially said you have a God-given right to an abortion.
That's exactly what it is. It's huge. And I love it because it gives me an opportunity to talk about natural law, which is kind of like ancillary to getting to talk about administrative law. I love it. Because it's so nerdy, but so important. And one of those that things that informs are the political conversations around the law. And people are talking about it and they don't know what they're talking about it. So let's give them a little bit of context. You mentioned that natural law is this, you know, philosophy and this idea that there are some rights that are quote unquote natural or God-given. And that's different than a school of thought who sees the government as a source of rights. And in U.S. Legal history, natural law is also linked really specifically to St. Thomas Aquinas. And so it's got this super theological space, which is like, oh my gosh, in American legal tradition, like we can do 5 podcasts on that. Not surprisingly, a lot of natural law arguments have historically been crafted and used to protect white male property owners. Basically, you know, boiled down to its sort of like intro 101 essence, I like to think of natural law as that like introduction to American libertarianism that sort of sounds good, right? Like, of course you have rights from God that the government can't take away. But in practice, when you're talking about who gets those rights granted from God, that's always really inured to the benefit of white male property owners. And, you know, the United States adds a sort of extra sprinkling of Jesus in that. Natural law proponents on the court include Neil Gorsuch and Clarence Thomas. So it's not like this is necessarily way outside the mainstream either. And so something that is super interesting also, the idea that natural law has this connection to this divine code to me in the Constitution means I don't think Thomas and Gorsuch read natural law and abortion rights in the same sentence.
You think?
Like the idea that they're going to say, God gave you a right to an abortion, I think made some heads explode.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. And so the fact that the Kansas Supreme Court said that reproductive autonomy is a part of a natural law framework is earth-shattering in terms
really
of legal
is.
News. I mean, so what it boils down to is Kansas protects abortion higher than the U.S. Constitution does right now.
They do.
And the Supreme Court of the United States can't overturn this decision. It has no jurisdiction to mess around with what Kansas wants to do with its own constitution. They just get to sit around and be mad about it, and they can fucking stay mad about it, as far as I'm concerned.
Stay mad, Neil. Stay mad.
Right.
Oh, but that's why the fight over Roe v. Wade could end up really being a fight over state constitutions, right? Because on the one hand, like we said, we have states like Georgia declaring a state right to offer greater legal protections for fetal life under state law, or, you know, Mississippi, where state lawmakers are trying similar arguments in defense of all the abortion restrictions that they've passed and, like, trying to swap out viability standards there. And so, you know, we've got one camp that is really staking out a state constitutional right to attack abortion rights as forcefully as they possibly can.
Right. And then on the other hand, we have states that have read their constitutions to protect abortion access to some degree. So rather than declaring greater legal protections for fetal life, they're declaring greater legal protections for pregnant people. And so there are state Supreme Courts in 13 states that have said specifically that their state constitutions independently protect decisions regarding pregnancy from unjustifiable government interference. And I'm going to list you those 13 states. So listeners, if you live in any of these 13 states, I don't know, high five yourself or something. So we've got Iowa, Minnesota, North Dakota, Alaska, Florida, West Virginia, Oklahoma, Montana, California, obviously, Massachusetts, pretty obviously, New Jersey, I don't know what the fuck's going on in New Jersey, and I'm practically from there, Ohio, which, you know, good God, and Tennessee. And now, it's important to note that even though the Tennessee State Supreme Court said that there was a right to abortion in their constitution, voters in 2014 basically superseded that by passing Amendment 1, which basically enacted fetal personhood in Tennessee. But still, I mean, that's a huge deal. That's 13 states that have said, you know what? Bring on the abortion, bitches.
Absolutely.
I mean, they didn't actually say that.
I'm going to put that on a t-shirt for sure. bring on the abortion. Comma bitches or bring on the abortion bitches? I guess it works either way.
It could be both. God, I love grammar.
That is amazing. Okay. State Supreme Courts in three states have also implied that their constitutions provide this protection also, which is huge because we are talking about Missouri. Okay, that's big. Missouri. New York, which, you know, I mean, you're okay for right now, but hey, anything's possible. Don't take anything for granted. And Utah. So in three states, there are state Supreme Court decisions that suggest an inkling to protect abortion rights at a level greater than the federal.
And there's only one appellate court to address this issue and find that their state constitution does not provide protection. And that's an intermediate appellate court in Michigan. So it's not the state Supreme Court. It's just a court of appeals in Michigan. And they said, nope, we don't have such a right. So screw you, Michigan. I mean, you're fine, Michigan, but screw you.
Right. We'll work on your judges, I guess.
Right, exactly.
But that's really important because that means that there are states like North Dakota and Ohio, which you mentioned, Imani, where the federal courts have grown as conservative now as state lawmakers, thanks to a lot of Trump appointments. And so it will be increasingly up to state courts then to protect abortion rights. So really, the battleground is starting to shift, which I guess leads to the question of what's next? What happens next?
Well, states are going to try to amend their constitutions to ban abortion by inserting personhood language. Kansas introduced a resolution called HCR 5004 back in January of this year before the Supreme Court issued its ruling in Kansas. As I said earlier, Tennessee superseded its ruling that the Constitution protected the right to abortion with Amendment 1, which voters approved in November 2014. And that amendment read, and I would imagine a lot of amendments in other states will read similarly, it read, "Nothing in this Constitution secures or protects a right to abortion or requires the funding of an abortion. The people retain the right through their elected state representatives and state senators to enact, amend, or repeal statutes regarding abortion, including but not limited to circumstances of pregnancy resulting from rape or incest, or when necessary to save the life of the mother." So we're going to see a lot more efforts like this to basically strip abortion rights from the Constitution.
And I think we'll see states that have partisan judicial elections will likely see an influx of outside money, right? We're going to see groups like the Judicial Crisis Network and the Republican State Leadership Committee. They're pouring money into state court elections to ensure that conservatives on the bench uphold laws and policy that reflect their conservative agenda. I mean, this absolutely has to do with abortion rights, but we're going to see this in terms of other areas like voter ID and gerrymandering, you know, issues that get tried in state constitutional venues as well. And so, you know, local elections matter, and voting for judges in local elections matter too.
It really does. And I know a lot of people don't think about voting for judges. And in a lot of states, you don't actually vote for your judges. So it's important to figure out whether or not you live in a state where you can influence these sorts of issues by voting for judges that will uphold these sorts of civil rights, that will uphold these natural rights.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, look into that, pay attention to that. And then also one thing you can do, support your local abortion clinics and support local abortion funds. I mean, those are, they're sort of the front line when it comes to providing funds for low-income people and other otherwise marginalized people who can't afford these services. So,
and while we have this time where the courts and state legislatures are figuring out and fighting over the boundaries of those rights, it is the clinics and the funds that are there making sure that the people who need access to services get them. So that is absolutely always a good thing to do. So a little bit of like mixed news, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Bonnie, like things are terrible, but maybe there's some hope. Like,
yeah. And honestly, I mean, 200 pages sounds like a lot, but I'm telling you, if you have the inclination whatsoever, just grab a copy of that Kansas decision and read it, because it will make you feel better and it will give you arguments that you can use when you're talking to anti-choicers about this issue.
Bounce over to the Facebook group. We'll happily talk to you about it.
We'll talk to you. We'll talk to her blue in the face. And that's going to wrap it up for us today. You know, mixed news, as Jessica said. If you want to continue this conversation or, you know, just yell about Kansas being, oh my God, Kansas, you can follow me on Twitter at Angry Black Lady. You can follow Jess on Twitter at Hegemommy, H-E-G-E-M-O-M-M-Y. And you can follow Rewire.news at Rewire_news. And you can, and you should, join our Facebook group. Just go to Facebook, look up Boom Lawyered, answer the question, and we'll let you right in.
Answer the question.
And aside from that, we'll see you on the tubes. Go Jayhawks!
See you on the tubes! Go Jayhawks! Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Jessica Mason Piclo and Imani Gandhi. This episode was produced by Mark Folletti, who is also our executive producer. And the Rewire.news editor-in-chief is Jody Jacobson.